Okay, Mr. Stoll and Dr. Fiskett, do you have anything else, additional remarks you'd like to make?
Yes, Madam Chairman.
Okay.
First, I just want to make sure that you all understand, the practice did not post a picture of Rocky on the day that this incident took place. The technician, Ms. Thompson, periodically updates Instagram and will sometimes post pictures, but not without the owner's consent. So I just didn't want that, there to be any confusion about that. As was pointed out by Dr. James last month, these type of things can happen anywhere, even in a grooming salon. These non-anesthetic dental procedures are about as safe a dental procedure as possible, but there are risks in every procedure, even nail trims and grooming. Please don't rush to judgment in this case because we had a tragic outcome. You must find a specific violation, and that must be supported by the evidence. What you have to determine is if it was reasonable for Dr. Fiskett to have cleared Rocky for a non-anesthetic dental cleaning after having been presented with a non-excited, non-coughing dog who showed no signs of a heart murmur. We all know hindsight is 20/20, and given the outcome, none of us would have allowed the technician to hold the dog and clean the dog's teeth if we had known what was going to happen. But Dr. Fiskett should be judged based upon the information that she had at the time and whether or not it was reasonable to, again, go forward with this non-anesthetic dental cleaning. Rocky did great during the procedure. It wasn't until the end when he rested, and unfortunately, we don't have a necropsy or a definitive cause of death. The opinion from VetMed is conjecture only. On the lack of emergency equipment, the proposed violation of the committee, the premise was inspected on multiple occasions by Executive Director Victoria Whitmore and other staff members, and the practice was never told that they needed emergency equipment or that they were there were any shortcomings or citations issued because of lack. And Dr. Fiskett testified it wasn't even suggested that it be necessary. They were not cited for not having any type of equipment because they don't administer any drugs and do not perform any surgeries. I know what the regulation says, and regulations can be confusing, but please, Dr. Fiskett shouldn't be disciplined for not having something that the board never told her was a requirement for her, this unique type of practice. At most, that issue warrants a letter of concern, but nothing more. As I told you last month, Dr. Fiskett is a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania with over 40 years of experience, and she has never had her license disciplined in any way. We don't feel she deserves to have her license disciplined now, given that there's no clear evidence to support a violation of a statute or regulation in this case. Doctor, you may have something on the lack of fluids.
There's just a couple of things. When the reason that Rocky was on the floor and released was because he started to squirm, and when some of these dogs do that, it means they want to poop. So Tracy released the dog, he stood up, he defecated, urinated, and as Tracy was cleaning that up, the dog collapsed. And that's when she called for me, and I went in and I administered CPR. I just didn't tap on the chest. The reason that the tongue was pulled out was because the first thing I did was check to make sure that the airway was open and patent and that there was nothing in the dog's mouth. And then I kept the tongue out and I straightened out the neck so that the airway would be open and air would move in and out of the dog as I compressed the chest. And there was no fluid ever coming out of Rocky's mouth. There was no coughing coming out of Rocky's mouth. There was a comment that there was fluid coming from the mouth. It was bloody fluid. None of that was present at the time that I saw the dog. I never would have released the dog into the owner's arms if that were true.
That was the vet med record. I made a reference to that. Again, we don't feel a violation is warranted on the equipment issue. We're now going to have some guidance. The doctor's indicated a complete willingness to comply with whatever the board feels is required in that regard. At most, that should be a letter of concern, but nothing beyond that.
Okay. Are there any more questions from board members?
I have one small technical question. Is the premise license for a specific location, or is it a mobile operation?
At the time, it was a premise license for that facility.
For that exact location?
For that exact location, and we were inspected there, and I was the responsible veterinarian for that facility.
Thank you.
Quick question. What is the policy regarding asking for medical records?
Me asking for previous
medical
records?
Or the practice, or what? Do you have a protocol for asking for medical records on these patients for the procedure?
For me to review beforehand? Mm-hmm. No, I do not. We have had clients have copies of the medical records because they were concerned about some of their dog's medical issues. Mm-hmm. And if they bring the medical records before we do the procedure, I will review them. And I will discuss that problem with the client, and then if they want us to proceed, we will.
Okay, but only if they bring them. That's otherwise, correct. There's no request for medical records.
No, there's not. If the client indicates that there is a medical issue, I will discuss that medical issue with the client. And if the client wants us to proceed, then we will.
So in this case, on the information we have, it says cough when excited and murmur. So would that trigger a discussion between you?
If Mr. Kalu had asked to speak to me, I did not go out and get Rocky. I didn't go and get him that particular. In that particular case, I was in the back finishing up some stuff from the previous case that we had, and I asked Tracy to go out and get the dog and bring the dog back.
So you say that I would have a conversation with the
if
owner. Only if he had requested. You as the doctor looking at this and seeing this didn't prompt you to want to have a discussion with
him? If I had heard the heart murmur, I would have gone out and talked to him about it and make sure that the dog was okay.
And if you didn't hear the heart murmur, then did that make you want to be more or less interested in finding out about this possible heart condition?
Well, I did not go out and speak to him.
You did?
I did not.
So if he had requested, but and you did know he had a history of a heart murmur and cough.
That is correct.
You didn't. It was in the record that you read.
It was written on the form after he initially left the form blank as far as any previous or medical concerns or mm-hmm. issues. And it was only when Tracy asked him, did he have any concerns about the dog's health? Oh, he coughs and he has a heart murmur.
And when did you read that?
I read that right before the procedure
right
started.
Right before the procedure started, okay. Are there vital signs taken and by who?
TPRs?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do them.
You do those?
I do those.
Okay.
And they're notated on the medical record.
Okay. Yeah, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the only question.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay. Thank you. You may step back. This now concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter.
So, this is a tough case because, for multiple reasons. I mean, one, obviously, it's a tragic outcome, so it always makes it such a harder case to review. In hearing both sides of this, I don't necessarily have concerns with the procedure being done. What I think I have concerns about is the communication with this owner. And I don't know that in a dog with a heart murmur that's 11 years old that has a 220 heart rate, I don't think any of us can say, absolutely no, you shouldn't do it, or absolutely yes, it's going to be safe. Like, you just don't know. What you have is a couple factors that make you go, this dog may be higher risk than the one-year-old that has a 150 heart rate, no heart murmur, right? So all you can do is risk assessment. And I feel like this dog had gotten into the category that I would have deemed it slightly higher risk, in which case it would have warranted a conversation with the owner on whether they wanted to go forward or not, or whether they wanted to have a cardiac workup done to see, make sure that there's no immediate indication that there's going to be an issue with this heart. these procedures, they're tough, because I agree. I don't think that anesthesia-free dentals pose any more concern than grooming or any of the other things that you do in a grooming salon. But what I would say about it is this was done by a veterinarian. And that, to me, makes the level of care that's being provided more. They own the fact that they should have this conversation. And I mean, I've consulted with multiple grooming salons across the course of my career, and I will tell you, every time if a dog comes in with a history of a heart murmur, there are different procedures that are put into place to handle that dog. They are often offered an express groom. A lot of times I'll tell them that they shouldn't use a muzzle on that dog. There are a lot of things that you take into account when you have a known issue. And that's what I feel like here. She didn't hear the heart murmur, but you had a documented history of it and signs, coughing, that are consistent of a heart issue, and we didn't do anything about it. So I think that that's really
and
the
tachycardia.
And I think that that goes back to the communication. Do I think it's gross negligence for performing it? No, I personally don't. I think the equipment issue, you know, there's a big perception when you're taking your pet to a veterinarian that they're going to have the equipment necessary. And I think it needs to be documented very clearly by this clinic that they are not an emergency. They do not have the ability to handle emergencies in a situation like this. So that it's very well known that the owner is getting that. They're not getting a veterinary hospital that has the equipment there to do it. So I guess I go back to, at this point, my mind is going down the path of professionally acceptable procedures for communication of the potential risks with the known condition of this dog. And the other violations I don't believe are relevant.
And I would tend to agree. I know the CPR is one that folks are kind of hung up on, and to the doctor's point, like, most of your CPR cases are, especially if they're not anesthetic related, are unsuccessful attempts anyway. I mean, there's a study that shows that 7% of them actually leave the hospital, especially if it's a non-anesthetic event. So, you know, TB has really done a really sad thing to CPR. People think because they see it on TV all the time that it's always successful, that that's what's going to happen, and that's not the case. And going to the example of the football player, he had an AED, which is not a required piece of equipment to have in a veterinary hospital either. So, you know, I think that when we talk about the CPR and what's required, not having those things, I mean, when we go to our own human doctors, generally speaking, or the dentist, they call an ambulance if an emergency happens. They don't necessarily have those emergency things either. So I think that's a big piece of the puzzle. And I do agree, like, that communication, would I have proceeded with a 220 heartbeat? I may have waited and rechecked it in 5-10 minutes, see if it calms down, just, you know, those types of things. But I'm not sure that the violations on the stuff in the clinic were really where my big concerns were.
I mean, there were signs of stress that were present. I call them signs of stress, not signs of excitement.
Right.
But that's just language. I mean, the elevated heart rate, there was, I believe, some documentation of panting. There was then the urination and defecation, which are clearly signs of stress. So there were multiple things. Now, at that point, the dog was probably having other issues, and so it was definitely stressed. But I don't know. I still go back to, I don't think the doctor can be held accountable to gross negligence for making a decision to put the dog under the procedure. But I do think there should have been communication around the risks associated with it, and the lack of the ability for this clinic to not be able to handle it should something happen.
So you're saying not following acceptable procedures only for communication, or just not following, or in addition, not following acceptable procedures for proceeding with
it? Would be professionally acceptable procedures for not communicating the fact that this dog had underlying conditions that the safest route would have been to work up first, and the next safest route would have been to do a procedure in a facility that had the ability to handle it.
Okay.
Should something happen.
Okay.
And the communication.
and think there's something to be addressed too, that as a veterinarian, you're responsible for the care that you're providing your patients. So to say, well, we've been inspected by the board and they didn't tell us we had to have A, B, C, D, E, there's not any veterinarian here that only carries drugs that the board told you to carry, because the board doesn't tell you to carry X, Y, Z drugs. So I think that's a difficult point, because it happened and then it was still, well, I'm gonna wait and see what the board says. It's like, well, but what about all the other patients you've seen in the meantime? Like, there, if something happens, then I think there should be some way, shape, or form to inform, if your pet has a cardiac event or any sort of event, we cannot intervene. Like, let people know that. Or we have limited resources to intervene, yeah. You know, or something. There, like, again, communication is a huge part of it. And then as far as CPR, yes, human CPR is much more successful than pet CPR, like, just is. But as far as pet CPR goes, you know, I mean, it does take the right knowledge, skills, and intervention to have a chance of being successful. If you have none of that, you have no chance. So, I mean, I think there is something to be, like, I think it should be addressed, even if it's separately, that the board isn't going to tell you every single drug and every single piece of equipment you should have. I mean, there's a standard of care that, as a doctor, don't you have some sort of responsibility to patients that you're taking
and,
care of?
And that's where I went to the communication of it, because if they communicated that we are not a veterinary hospital, we do basic grooming procedures, and we have a veterinarian on site, but we don't have the equipment or the medications to handle an emergency. And if that had been clear, right, then I'm fine with them not having the equipment to handle it, because right, they've been clear and upfront about it. But it wasn't that. It was they didn't have it, and I didn't feel like it was very well communicated that they didn't have it, if at all.
So yes. I'm gonna side with Ms. Frost on not totally ignoring not having adequate equipment, because I get it that statutes and rules, either one, have to give you some freedom and leeway. They can't dictate every single thing exactly how, when, what, why, and where. And it may be an over simplified analogy that somebody's probably gonna make fun of me, but you can drive your car without a spare tire and you're not gonna get a ticket, right? Does that mean it's smart to drive your car without a spare tire? Probably not. You can do it, and you might never get a flat tire. But you might. I mean, it's not going to never happen.
Well, and I'm not trying to say that I don't think they should have equipment. I guess what I'm saying is that if you're not going to have equipment, the minimum is at least telling people that, and letting them know that they're making a decision to have a procedure done. And it's different to me than a veterinarian, because than a groomer, because this is a veterinarian. This is a premise. This is a veterinarian, right?
Yeah.
It's not, so I guess that's where I feel like the communication almost has to be way above and beyond, because people would make the assumption that this veterinarian has the equipment. And if you're not gonna have it, you better be very upfront.
Right, and as a veterinarian, to triage and provide your client, educate your client previous to doing the procedure in that way, that there also is this other way where we could do it, where we have monitoring and airway maintenance. And to me, it seemed like a high-risk situation that would have been more amenable to use anesthesia.
Yeah, I actually think anesthesia would have been safer.
Yeah.
But.
So, I mean, I would at least like to have seen that offered, because that was a decision that they didn't make, you know.
Which gets us to, did the respondent follow acceptable medical procedures, aside from the communication? I think is what you're saying.
Yeah, and yeah. Also after the CPR was unsuccessful, I relocated to the second facility. Was there contact made, and was that deemed, you know, it just seemed like there was not a very smooth transition to that.
I don't know.
After the fact as well. It was probably too little too late, more than likely, but it didn't appear to me that there was a lot of effort into streamlining that procedure for that second option. Okay.
All right, so I'll go forward with the motion of 3222, 32, and number 12 as it relates to R311501 for failure to provide professionally acceptable procedures, for not relaying the potential risks of the procedure to the pet owner, as well as not relaying the fact that should the pet have an issue, that they're not an office that would be able to have the equipment to handle it. And then I would add in there that there's concern, and whether it falls below the standards of care, maybe it's a letter of concern, but as part of finding a violation, I don't know how you do that, that dogs with known medical conditions should be evaluated, and that you should be making sure that your owners know that there are potential safer or other procedures that could be done to make this less risky. So,
how does that relate to the violation?
Well, it's kind of, to me, the violation was on communication, but right. You guys were referencing that you felt it was also on the judgment of that, so it was kind of more of that being a concern of the board rather than
a separate
violation.
That's a separate violation. We have it.
It's not really a violation because it's a, I was doing it more as a concern.
As a, just a concern.
A concern.
Okay. I think the fact that the onus is being put on the owner to bring the medical records so that the veterinarian can do a sufficient medical evaluation before doing any procedure is misplaced.
I don't think it's on that type of business, because that is a low cost, low maintenance. That's not your regular vet, and you know it's not your regular
right,
vet.
Right.
So you better go get your records and you take them there. It is your onus. It can't be that veterinarian's onus. This is like a machine. I mean, you're going to do 20 dogs. You're not going to do 5.
10.
And spend, you know.
But that's not an excuse for not following.
No, I mean, it's not an excuse for not following up, but yeah. You wouldn't be calling, oh, I got, and they're walking in, probably not appointments.
Yeah.
Or there's walk-ins in between appointments, so.
Put them at the end of the line and get some
records. That.
Put them at the end of the line and get some records. And
yeah.
If you don't get them,
yeah.
I'm not going to do it.
Would you do that for every vaccine appointment?
No, I'm talking about with a stated known condition.
But I mean, the same to Mr. Wilkie's point, like if you had the veterinarian was responsible for reviewing medical records of every patient that was coming in with a known issue, I mean, you have walk-in vaccine clinics, maybe the dog had a history of an issue before, but you're not going to know that. Do you have to go through, you know, so like at what
that's
point
part
is
of
it?
You, that's part of your, I mean, you're the property owner. It's your responsibility to take care of your property, which might mean carrying those records around you. Or might not. Might not matter to you. But if that property does matter to you, then maybe you need to keep some of those records with you.
Well,
but yeah, it's on the onus of the property owner, not somebody that you're asking to do a service.
I think though, in this case, the property owner, which is hard for me to say about an animal, but I feel like in this case, they did document that. They said, my dog has a heart murmur, and it sometimes coughs because of the heart murmur or because of the excitement associated with it. So I think they did give that information, and would have, if the vet had said, you know, let me see more about this. What workup has been done? Let's get the past records. They would have approved getting them, right? Like, because the veterinarian, you know, would have prompted that kind of conversation.
But they never got them on Labor Day.
Well, because they didn't ask for
right.
it. They didn't ask for it. They wouldn't have gotten them on Labor Day, but.
So communication with the owner and then cancel the procedure to
right.
see these records.
Right, and that's where it goes back to you communicate
rules,
the rest.
So they interfere with commerce and freedom.
Well,
I mean, we can't get.
I think that was just Jane saying that she thinks we should have it, but I don't think that's a violation. I don't think you were you put attaching a violation to the fact that she didn't.
No,
the
I was expressing concern about comments.
Yeah.
In this particular
yes.
case, this is what you felt should have
right,
happened.
Right,
and that's where I.
And that you're saying is standard of practice.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay,
I would agree with that.
I made a motion, but I
we have
think
a motion.
A second.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
So did you guys want to separate the violation and then make a separate motion on the letter of concern, if that's where you were going with that?
I just did it as one motion, but I could separate it. I did a motion for the violation, and then I did, as part of that motion, I said, and then I would have a letter or a concern, a noted concern about the dog's
living. So you might have a different vote.
Yeah, how about just separate that out as a part of our discussion? This is a named concern, and do we need to send a letter because she's right here?
That's what I said. It wasn't really a letter of concern.
It's on recording.
It's a concern. So I'll just leave it with my initial motion and take out the concern part.
Then I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Let's do roll call.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Traeger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Loheed?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Nay.
Ms. Solomon?
Nay.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Motion carries. Now, does anyone want to make a different motion about a different issue? Like, for a concern? Okay.
The board has voted to find a violation. This concludes the matter. And Dr. Fiskett, you will receive written confirmation of the board's action shortly. Thank you all for participating. We are going to take another 5-minute break, and then we'll come back and do our second informal with Dr. Jones.